This is Vectis Radio. For the people, by the people.
This show is sponsored by the new Rembrandt Gallery, professional bespoke picture framers. We undertake all types of framing work. Visit us in person at 15 Scarrett's Lane, call us on 01983 529 285 or Facebook the new Rembrandt Gallery.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of Wit, Wisdom and Pratfalls with me, Joan Ellis, and my special guest today, Jill George, an Admiral nurse based here in Newport at the Earl Mountbatten Hospice. Welcome, Jill.
Thank you.
It's lovely to have you here. Thank you for your time, because I imagine that's a very precious commodity.
It is, but I'm very glad to be here.
Yeah. And so what we want to do today, I think, is really raise awareness of your role and your team's role and the extent of the issues we face here on the island with dementia and Alzheimer's. So how did you get into the role?
I've been working at the hospice since 2003 when I set up the hospice at home team. So my heart's always been in palliative care and end-of-life care. And we were looking to how we could actually extend the care of the hospice to other diseases in a way. I mean, we've often been considered just cancer, and it's never been just cancer, MND, and now we're really open to all areas. And looking at that, it was considered, you know, looking at the Admiral nurse role would be the next best thing to do at the hospice. And Sally Grills raised a huge amount of money, and we have now a post, which I have, I'm very pleased to have, at the hospice of an Admiral nurse.
That's because she's lent, obviously she's Bear Grylls' mum, I'm sure she won't mind us saying that, because that lends a lot of weight, doesn't it?
Yes.
And brings an awful lot of good publicity.
Yes.
to your work. So,
yeah, I mean, she's worked, her and her colleagues and friends in Benbridge and all over the place have worked extraordinarily hard to raise money for this role. And we're really lucky on the island actually now, because we have actually 5 Admiral nurses. I'm the only one at the hospice, and that's more advanced dementia, end of life. But the other 4 are with the mental health services at the memory centre, memory service.
And is that based at St Mary's? Yes,
absolutely.
Yeah. So I think you were telling me earlier that you do a lot of work in the community, so you're more based outside of the hospice itself.
Absolutely, because people's homes are obviously very, very, very precious to them, and especially with a dementia, knowing where you are is really, really important, and going out to visit people in their homes and working very much with the family as well to help them cope with behaviours and things like that, and just being there as support for both the person with dementia and the carers too.
Because it's one of those illnesses, isn't it? It's so devastating for the family, isn't it? And it can produce quite challenging behaviours, can't it? And very, not necessarily always challenging, but always quite different to perhaps the person you knew.
Yes, and what we always say, and what I always believe is if someone is being, you know, you could say challenging or behaviours that we don't understand, different behaviours than usual, there's usually a reason behind that. You know, you might look at, have they got an infection? Have they got, are they constipated? All those simple things. When someone can't tell you, it's important that you have to be a detective in a way and think, why is that person behaving like that?
Yes, it's like dealing with a child or a baby, isn't it? Because they can't explain where the pain is, or even that they're in pain.
So
it's very difficult.
Yeah, pain is case in point as well. I know there's research out there that says that people that say have a broken neck of femur, you know, a broken hip, go into hospital. People with a dementia get half as much analgesia as people without a dementia. And it can't be that they aren't in as much pain. But obviously, sometimes you might ask someone and they might say no. But actually, they're not saying no. No is perhaps the word that they use more often than other
words. Absolutely. And often, sadly, no means yes with them, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
And you can ask the same question in a different way and get a completely different answer because the comprehension is so so low. Yeah.
And that's why it's very important to consider when, you know, when any behaviour change, and the expert is always the person, the carer who's there all the time, because they know that person really, really well.
Absolutely.
So they know when there's a change in behaviour. Mm. And that will, you know, signal to look, oh, is there a problem? Are they in pain? Have they got a headache? You know, are they, as we've said, you know, a urine infection? All those things that could be changing their behaviour.
Yes, and I was also meaning that the person with the dementia or Alzheimer's is a completely different person often to the person that your loved one was before they became ill.
I think sometimes something like frontotemporal dementia actually changes the personality very much. And I know, you know, with the dementia as well, it feels like the person isn't there. But I think I was saying to you earlier about the emotional person is often there inside, and that is finding that person, knowing that that person inside is still there. Those emotions are still intact. If all the facts and the figures and things like that have fallen away, those emotions are often there inside to be accessed.
And I think that's really key to remember, that, isn't it? Especially when you're visiting a loved one and perhaps you're not getting the response you remember or the response you imagined you'd get or hoped you'd get.
Yes.
And to feel sometimes quite disappointed by a visit because you're not getting anything really back.
Yes.
But like you say, more is going on emotionally for them than perhaps they can show.
Absolutely. And with the dementia bookcase analogy, which I won't go into the whole thing,
can you top line that dementia bookcase analogy?
Okay, let me imagine I was an 80-year-old lady.
Yeah.
Okay, and I have a dementia, and on my right hand side I've got a bookcase. Okay, right, and it's filled with all the facts and figures, everything that I've known about all my life.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes, you know, the top shelf is my most recent memories, what I had for breakfast this morning, how I got here. The next shelf is, oh, I don't know, what I did last year, something like that. And then my 70s, my 60s, my 50s, my 20s are down by my knees somewhere. And my childhood is right down by my ankles.
Okay.
When dementia comes along, it knocks this bookcase, okay, and it begins to wobble. So what do you reckon happens first?
The top shelf falls out.
Yeah, the books on that top shelf fall off. That's the first things to go. So you probably notice with people that those recent memories are the ones to go first.
I see.
And it also becomes really hard to put books back on that top shelf because they keep wobbling. So people trying to remember new things, it's very, very difficult. And in fact, it becomes almost impossible for them to take on board any new information. But that bookcase will wobble and wobble and wobble, and the books will fall out. And that's why sometimes people end up as if they're living in the 1950s, something like that. So if you can imagine, if I go into my kitchen, right?
Yeah.
And I'm thinking I'm in the 1950s, what do you see that's different?
Virtually everything.
Yeah. Absolutely. And one of the most common mistakes that people make is they put an electric kettle on the hob.
Oh, yes,
because,
of course.
I mean, it's so logical. You think people are being absent-minded. They're not. They're doing what they remember. That's how you make a cup of tea. That's what you do. And it might be very simple to think, oh, right, well, we won't let them make tea anymore. But actually, there's a simple answer to it. You know, get a whistle kettle.
Yes, do it the old way.
Do it the old way. Because I probably learnt about, you know, doing a kettle with an electric kettle in my, I don't know, 70, in the 70s or the 60s.
Yeah.
But I actually learnt about a hob kettle way down by my feet.
Yes.
So, okay, we go on to that. And on the other side, which is, this is the hippocampus. That's what all those memories are on. On this side, I've got another bookcase, but it's a much stronger one. It's more like a strong,
well-made, sturdy bookcase. It's
a John Lewis, you know, really strong bookcase. And that's part of what you've got in your brain called your amygdala. And in that, I've got all same thing, filled with memories, filled with books and things, but it's all my emotions and my feelings. So what you were saying to me just now, you come and see me, okay, and we have a blazing row and we get really cross with each other. And you might think, well, she won't remember. She won't remember that we had that blazing row. And you're right, I probably won't. But the feelings I'm left with will still be there. Those feelings of being cross and sad will still be there. But on a nicer note, if you come and see me, we go out, we have an ice cream, we have a lovely time down Ryde Beach, and then we come back. And yeah, okay, next half hour, next day, I've completely forgotten we've done that. But I'm still left with that lovely feeling of feeling warm and loved and wanted.
Okay, so it's like an association. The person with dementia Alzheimer's will see you and remember the feeling that you made them feel.
Exactly.
So they've got a good feeling about you, so they're content and happy to be with you. And
absolutely. So the next time you come, they will have that feeling. It's not necessarily work, but that feeling, because that is the real person that's inside there. And it's accessing that person inside.
And I suppose at a very basic level, as long as you've made them feel safe, I think, is good. And you haven't given them anything to perhaps worry them or stress them out.
Yeah. And there's a lady, Dr. Gemma Jones, who does training here, and she's absolutely amazing. And, you know, she'll ask us questions like, what do you think that someone would want to hear with an advanced dementia if they're not speaking, nothing? And there are just three words, and you might think, I love you, of course, which is lovely. Mm. But it's also, I am here, because knowing that someone is there.
Okay, because my mum is in Polars, as regular listeners of the show will know, and they do a wonderful, wonderful job.
Yes, they do.
And mum, bless her, she's lost a lot of powers of speech and communication. Mm. She does smile occasionally and look happy, but I think we're at the point now where, you know, I say I love you and I hold her hand. And I have to accept that sometimes that's enough. Yes. You know, I want to do more, but she doesn't want to be doing puzzles or looking through the paper or anything like that. She's not really interested. She loves photos, recent photos, not necessarily old ones. I think the old ones confuse her because she can't remember who people are. But the new ones with, you know, my little grandson, so she recognises him. But it is that it's for us as the relative or the carer to know that sometimes that's just enough, isn't it?
Yeah.
And that we don't have, that you can't beat yourself up because you're not doing all the things perhaps you feel you should or other people are doing if your loved one isn't in that situation.
And sometimes touch is as big a communication way as speaking.
Yes.
So if someone, you know, if you're speaking and someone doesn't really understand, but touch is such a powerful medium. Yes. That if you're just there smoothing hands,
yes,
combing hair, sometimes just putting on a lipstick, something like that, something really, really personal, I think that is good for both sides of the party.
Yes, yes, I do that. And I have to say, she does love a box of chocolates. So very happy, you know, not happy if I turn up without a box of chocolates, very happy if I do. And the first time I took a large box in, and everybody looked at me, all the other residents looked, well, not me, at the box of chocolates. Yeah, and I kind of thought, I better go round and offer them all one. So I went round and everybody took one, and very happy too. And then by the time we got back to mum, there was only two left in the box. And she was so cross with me,
That's lovely,
isn't it? Yeah.
Real.
Yes. Why wouldn't she be? Yes. Yeah. Don't do. So I've learned not to do that again. I have to take in two boxes, I think, in future, one for them and one for mum. But yes, and just fill her room with fresh flowers and things like that. And it is. It's a very those little tiny things that you, like I say, you keep wanting to do more. But those things are the precious things, aren't they? And the important things.
And I think that's probably enough as well. That's, you know, that's. That stimulation, that knowing that you're there is, although in days gone by, as you say, you might have done, you know, puzzles or talked, you know, we get smaller, don't we, as we get,
yes,
you know, our world gets smaller and smaller, and we need less and less in a way.
Yes.
But love and touch is really important.
And what would you say, or how, to someone who's perhaps in the situation where they've got a loved one that's, you know, had to go into 24-hour care, and they go and they think, well, they don't even know who I am anymore. What's the point of visiting? And I find it quite stressful, so they don't know who I am. I find it very difficult to see my mum, dad, loved one in this situation, so I just won't go, or I won't go that often. But how would you speak to them?
Well, if you think about, go back to the bookcase analogy, that person, knowing that emotion is there, they may forget it's you that has come, but it's very important that they they get those feelings of someone that loves them and wants to be with them, even though it is difficult when, you know, people get very upset when they feel they're not recognised. But the feeling could still be there, and someone will get a lot out of that visit.
Yes. Yes.
And also, have you heard of a thing called Namaste?
No.
Honouring the spirit within. It's a yoga term, I think.
Can you say that? Sorry, what was
Namaste?
Uh-huh.
And it's something that it's a form of care that we're trying to bring into care homes, and we've had quite a few. We've had a lady down called Minsp Thackpool from St Christopher's in London, and they've set it up in some care homes around London. Basically, people with an advanced dementia, people that aren't really communicating. It's a program that goes on twice a day, and after breakfast, the room is warm. There's music, there's nice smells, there's finger food, there's drink, and it just takes one carer to actually, you know, massage, like you were saying with your mum, massaging hands, or just combing hair, or just being with those people, to actually to give their, you know, real attention to people. Because often, if people are very quiet, they sort of get less attention than anyone else.
So
this, and bringing people together, and it doesn't actually cost a lot either, which is so important, I know, for care homes.
Yes, and that's the issue, isn't it? It's having the staff to do the hands-on care, so do the personal care and get them dressed and feed them and make sure they're safe.
Yeah.
And put them to bed at night, so those very basic needs are met. But it's having that little extra bit on the triangle to ensure that these deeper, more emotional needs are met, isn't it? And just having someone who has the time, like you say, to sit with each resident and make them feel a little bit special and loved. Yeah.
And what sometimes happens is, you know, you were saying when someone goes into 24-hour care, they can feel sometimes a bit disempowered as well.
Mm.
And it's persuading staff and persuading that person, it'd be really nice to join in with that care, to feel, if that's what they want to do, to be there, to do the hand massage. There's a lovely story from the first time they set up the Namaste. This lady whose mum was there went in, and she was helping. She was doing a bit of hand massage and just chatting to her mum. And she said the first time in years her mum took her hand and just patted it.
Oh.
She said it was the first motherly thing she'd done for years.
Oh, that's lovely.
And it really said that person is there.
Yes.
And those lovely soothing things really helped. So, you know, it's as you say, it's given that extra care, isn't it?
Yes.
It's not just the basics. We can all sort of and we all need the basics, don't get me wrong. But it's going that extra mile, really.
We know sort of mum's having a good day when, because they describe her as a little monkey, you know. So.
I love that.
And usually she's like a little kitten, but they say, oh, she's a little monkey, your mum. I say, yes, you know, I have been trying to tell you. She has got this other side to her,
yeah.
You know. And we had, I think I've told the story before, but it's such a sweet story. They had a troupe of dancers came into Polars, and they were all talking about it the next day. We didn't know it was happening. And they said, oh, your mum can dance. And I said, yes, you know, she met my father at the Hammersmith Palace. She used to love to dance, but doesn't do it anymore. Oh, yes, she does. She did it yesterday. And I said, please tell me you've got this on film. And somebody, thankfully, had captured it on their tablet. So I'm now the proud owner of this sort of tiny little snatch of film of mum cavorting around with this gentleman and looking as happy as Larry, you know. So to see mum smiling is so different and lovely, just wonderful. And then so the following day we went in, and I went in with my husband and one of your admiral nurses who was coming to meet mum. And I said, oh, look, here's the film. She loves to dance. And I said to my husband, ask mum to dance. So he said, come on, Joan, do you want to dance? And she looked him up and down, you know, really had a good old scrutinise. And she went, no. I thought, okay, well, she'll dance with me. I'm her daughter. It'll be fine. So I said, come on, mummy. And she just gave me this look. And the admiral nurse said, she's looking at you like you're just kind of crazy. And I said, and so be it. She has the past 58 years, to be frank. You know, that's mum.
Yeah.
And it really was quite clear she didn't want to dance with either of us. Mm. And then the admiral nurse said, Joan, would you like to dance with me? And, of course, what did she do?
She
got up and had a lovely time. That's so my mum. They're like, oh, fine, thanks. Here's your chocolates. Yes.
Which shows she's there.
Yes, and how lovely, you know, we were just laughing our heads off. And you feel a bit, and then you think, no, that's mum. You know, that is a little bit of her spirit saying, yes, don't dance with you, or you better dance with you. And how lovely is that, that that is still there when she chooses to kind of bring it out. Yeah, so, and I think it's having those moments that make you laugh quite unexpectedly, because sometimes I go and see her and, you know, if you're not having a particularly good day yourself, you think, well, this is just very desperate and I, you know, feel very low coming and seeing mum in this condition. But then something magical like that invariably happens, and it can be such a tiny little thing. And just to see her avidly eating chocolate after chocolate, because she always used to say to me when we shared chocolates, you know, you've had enough. And I think, is there any such thing? I don't really understand that language, mum. But she said, you know, you've just been greedy now, I think you've had enough. And she would know when to stop. And she'd always say to me, you never know when to stop, do you? And because she was absolutely right. And I've lived my whole life by that kind of belief. But she would always know. Whereas now, she doesn't. And I think it just doesn't matter. She's 90. And that's one of her small pleasures in life. And just enjoy it. Yeah. You know, lovely.
But those little moments are so precious, as you say.
Yes.
And they mean more than anything.
Oh, truly. Yeah.
They really do. And the joy that people get out of those moments, and I think we all realise how difficult it can be, but the flip side is people get a lot of satisfaction out of knowing that they can have those moments, that those moments are there.
Yes, and I think it's one's own expectations that you have to change slightly. You know,
yes.
and not expect the earth. And I had very unrealistic expectations at the beginning of this process when mum went into care. Mm. I thought that somebody somewhere would unlock something for mum, and it would take an expert to do that, that I couldn't do it, that this would happen, and whether it meant she remembered, you know, like you say, making a meal in the 1940s, or whether she started to like a particular type of music that she'd remembered when she was younger, something would come to the fore. But of course that's not how it works at all. So I was very disappointed, and I have to say I was very angry about that. And you know, on top of being very angry that mum has Alzheimer's, you know, so I found that very difficult. But gradually, I think it's like any, you just go through different stages, don't you? And then gradually I've moved to this point of acceptance. It's been almost a year, and I'm almost at a point of acceptance. Yeah. But you can't jump there, can you?
You can't, and it is in its way. It's a grieving process, isn't
very
it?
Much so.
Because you feel, you know, often people say, I feel as if I'm losing people before they're
yes.
gone. And it's almost anticipatory grief, which is quite almost a normal way of being and trying to understand it. And that's why I think it's important that the whole of us, all, you know, especially on the island, it would be really good if people really understood what it meant, you know, to have a dementia. And then when people are, you know, not stepping on mats because they think they're going to fall down a hole, you haven't got a row of people behind tutting because they don't understand that actually that is very serious for someone
yes.
who think they're going to step into a hole when it's just a mat.
I think often with us as, you know, people, we have to, a lot of us have to walk a mile in somebody else's shoes before we get it, don't we?
Yes.
And yeah. no matter how much we're told, it's that thing. And then you go through it yourself and you think, oh my goodness me, you know, I have perhaps been very not terribly understanding with friends or relatives who've gone through something similar, and now I'm experiencing it, and it is very, very difficult.
And you know, I know we keep saying this, but when you've met one person with dementia, you've met one person with dementia. So everybody's experience will be so different.
Yes.
Because everyone's personality is different. Everyone's
yes.
memories are different, which is extraordinary, isn't it? The whole world, you know, nobody would have the same experience.
So it's such a difficult thing to treat and to deal with, isn't it? I mean, because it manifests, it presents in so many different forms.
It does, as you know. I mean, there are actually, you know, over 100 different forms, would you believe?
Wow.
I mean, there's only about 5 or 6 that are quite common, and Alzheimer's is the most common one. But there are so many different forms of dementia that as I say, there is no right or wrong. It's and the carer is often the expert because they know that person.
Absolutely. But 100 different forms, but all of them equally devastating, aren't they?
Yes, yeah. Indeed.
Okay, so thank you very much, Jill. We'll be straight back after this break. So please stay tuned to Vectus. Follow us on Twitter at Vectus Radio and on Facebook. And look forward to hearing more from Jill George, Admiral Nurse, here at the Earl Mountbatten Hospice in Newport. Thank you.
This show is sponsored by the New Rembrandt Gallery, professional bespoke picture framers. We undertake all types of framing work. Visit us in person at 15 Scarrett's Lane, call us on 01983 529 285 or Facebook the New Rembrandt Gallery.
Hello and welcome back to this week's edition of Wit, Wisdom and Pratfalls with me, Joan Ellis, and my special guest, Jill George, Admiral Nurse here at the Earl Mountbatten Hospice. Welcome back, Jill.
Thank you.
And before the break, we were talking about dementia and the impact it has not only on the patient, but on their loved ones and relatives and carers. And I'd just like to talk a bit more about your role because, you know, you've been doing it for a long time now, haven't you? Was it 2003 you started there?
That's when I started with the hospice, which was, you know, end of life and palliative care. And I've only actually been in the Admiral Nurse role since last September.
Yes, so that was, like we were saying, Sally Grills is kind of... And does she still do a lot of fundraising for
it? I believe so,
yeah.
Absolutely.
So she's a real champion of the cause, isn't she?
Very passionate about it, yes. I believe she experienced... not herself, but you know, she was somewhere where she heard people calling out and she felt that help was needed.
And it is
passion.
All power to her for that, because it is something that I think it's a very misunderstood condition, and certainly I think the way it impacts on families and carers is devastating.
Yes.
Absolutely devastating.
Yes.
So what do you find, I mean, it's a big question, and I imagine every aspect. What do you find the single most rewarding aspect of when you get up in the morning? What do you think, this is the thing that I'm going to always get out of the day?
I think it's communication with the person with dementia, with the carers, with formal carers as well, you know, in residential homes, trying to actually ensure people are valued for the work they do, because it's very rewarding work, you know, like you were saying, in polos, but it also can be very difficult work.
Oh, indeed, mentally and physically.
Absolutely, yeah. And we don't value people enough, I think, doing those sort of jobs, and that's what we should be doing.
I certainly don't think we pay them enough.
Oh well, I totally agree with you. It's, you know, it's always the same, isn't it? You know, that we're looking after other human beings, and yet it's, you know, a very, very basic wage for doing that.
I'd say it's one of the hardest jobs, but in the loveliest sense, you know, because it is very rewarding.
Yes.
But nonetheless, I think it's very demanding work and totally undervalued, that role. Not only in a monetary sense, but I think how people perceive the role. And, you know, there we are in trusting our loved ones to these people. So they deserve huge accolades in my book for what they do.
And in my book too. And, you know, sometimes we do training sessions at the hospice, and, you know, we're trying to go out into various homes, you know, like polos, and just say to the carers, okay, how can we help? What can we tell you? What can we work alongside you? What don't you know? What are you worried about? And those sort of things. Because it's really important. We might know what we think they should know, but actually, there's lots of different things that come up that people are frightened of. And if they're not, you know, like with end-of-life care, it seems such a big thing, doesn't it? But actually, basic care and basic... you know, I always think I'll be out, do myself out of a job, really, because I feel it's not rocket science. If I looked after someone the way I'd want to be looked after, I want my dad to be looked after, or my mum, you know, that's all you've got to think. And good basic care, dignity. We shouldn't have to teach dignity. Would I like to be lying there with nothing on? Of course I wouldn't. I would like to be covered if you were watching
absolutely,
me.
Absolutely.
I'd want to be warm. I'd want you to talk to me. You know, if someone's died, I still keep talking to people because I feel that person is there, that they deserve that dignity.
Absolutely. I was interviewing Penny Kershaw, the manageress at Polars, and that's an interview that will be coming in April the 21st, I think that's scheduled for. I had to pre-record that because obviously, you know, Penny was so busy. I had to get up there and do it on site, catch a few moments with her. But we were talking about exactly that, that, you know, she can't teach carers they've got to be innate, those qualities, haven't they? It doesn't matter how many qualifications one has, it's about being a genuinely caring person and just instinctively knowing, like you say, that you look after this person as you would your own parents, and how would you like to be looked after?
I think you're right, but I think if we value people, then they value the people they're looking after.
Yes, of course.
And I think that is really important.
And, of course, the reverse of that is true.
Absolutely.
If they're on minimum wage, they're on long hours, they're being overlooked, then, of course, that they're running around, and it's really tough on everyone, isn't it?
It is. And, you know,
vicious circle.
I've been in places where, you know, it's just felt right, it's felt really good, and I've said to the staff, what makes this home different? You know, why is it like this? And they'll say, oh, you know, the manager's really good, she'll roll up her sleeves, she'll, you know, help us on the floor, you know, if we want time off, she'll try and organise it. But they say, but then when we need time off, you know, or when she needs an extra shift doing, we're happy to do it. And that's just so simple, isn't
yes.
it? But
yes.
it makes so much sense, because they're valued by their managers, and then, you know, they've in turn value the people they look after.
Yes, it's got to come from the top, hasn't it?
It has.
As in any organisation, yeah, that it filters down
yes,
and you can feel it.
Yeah.
And when I first went interview Polars, I always say this, but I just felt this kind of waft of love, which I really wasn't expecting to feel, wasn't looking for it. And there it was, I thought, well, that's here.
Yes.
Nobody can tick a box and put that here.
Yeah.
That just happens to be here.
Yeah.
Because of the people, they make it so lovely. And they also will always make time for us, the relatives and carers, because sometimes you go in there on your knees, you know, you've got the rest of your life perhaps isn't going that, you're not having the greatest day in the world, and then you go in and you're feeling a bit low to see your loved one in that state, you know, not as you remember them, and they'll kind of pick up on that and go, you're all right, and take you to one side and
make you a cup of tea.
Yeah,
yes,
and
it's so important.
Yes, and it just be a few moments, because obviously, you know, they're really busy, but you think, thank you for noticing, and thanks for the kindness, and it's really appreciated. And if you like that with me, you're going to be like that with Mum, and I can see they're like that with Mum, and it's so big shout out for all carers at Polars, and, you know, across the island, because you've done a wonderful, wonderful unsung job. So go home, put your feet up, have a nice cup of tea, and pat yourself on the back.
But seriously, if you know, if there are people out there, and just to let you know, we do a monthly week of training, which is free at the hospice. So get your manager. We've sent it all out to managers.
All right.
Hopefully they will know.
So somebody who's already a carer, can come to you.
Yeah, absolutely. Just phone up the hospice, and you can find out when they are, or ask your manager, because I'm sure they've got them. And we're having loads of people coming.
So that's for specific dementia and Alzheimer's training,
dementia
is it?
Dementia and end of life, and for end of life care as well. So, you know, there are three different days that we do it. One, the Thursday is usually for like trained staff or people, you know, more to do with symptom control. But Tuesday is basic end of life care, and Wednesday is once a month is dementia and end of life care.
Okay, and what about for somebody perhaps that's listening that thinks, hadn't considered caring as a career option, but now it just sounds like me, this is the kind of person I am, could they get in touch with you as well?
I don't see why not. Absolutely.
Yeah. And you could put them
in
touch with or whoever.
And also they could come and just see if they would like to, you know, and meet other carers, because I think one of the importance about the training is it's like interaction with different people, sharing stories. I've learnt a huge amount from carers that have been in and told us stories about this happened, and having to think about, oh, how would you work that? And everyone in the room can join in, and I think it's a good way to learn.
Definitely, yeah, listen and learn, yes, learn from other people's mistakes or good experiences.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, fantastic. So to get in touch with you, Jill George, at the Earl Mountbatten Hospice.
Pleasure, please do.
Fantastic.
Absolutely.
Brilliant, because I think there's a lot of people out there who would be brilliant in that role, and we need more people doing this kind of work, don't we?
We do. You'd be amazed, you know, just get people home from hospital, from, you know, having carers out there is so important. And, you know, people burn out very quickly if they're not valued.
Yes.
And then we lose really good carers because they've, you know, the good ones get put upon a lot, you know, please do more shifts because there aren't enough. So if we could have more, yeah. Anybody out there, please.
Yes, definitely, definitely. So get in touch with Jill George at the Earl Mountbatten Hospice, I would say, because if you know there you're that kind of person, those are qualities you've got in spades, then you could really be helping families and those people who are suffering. Yeah, that would be wonderful. So we were talking, you know, you were, like you said, you specialise in end-of-life care. And I think it's a subject that people are talking about more now, aren't they? Death. And it's something that comes to us all, yet we all just don't want to know, do we? We all back away from it.
I think it's such a shame. I mean, I always tell the story about my little mum. Before I was a nurse, she'd say, when I die, dear, and I'd go, don't talk about it, Mum. I don't want to hear. I don't want
natural
hear.
Reaction, yeah.
And she would always say, well, you don't go any quicker by talking about it.
It's very true.
True, and I've always remembered that. And it's not like we'll go out and a bolt of lightning will suddenly come down because we've, you know. And I do, you know, make a habit of going and, you know, at a barbecue, I'll start talking about death and dying, and I don't get invited out much, as you can quite imagine. But, you know,
Julie, no mates.
Yeah, exactly. But we just need to make it normal.
Of course.
It's, you know, you won't get a bolt of something. We have to talk to each other about it because it's just death and taxes, they say, don't they? And it's, if you know what you want and you tell your partner or your husband, or, you know, you're more likely to get that. And you can do it at 50, 60, 70, at 20 even. You know, people should think about it. It doesn't mean it's going to happen tomorrow.
No, but you're absolutely right. And I think that's the fear, isn't it? It's the sort of almost tempting fate,
yes,
isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Which is silly, isn't it, when you think about it, really?
But I remember when I had my daughter, I mean, I was quite old, I was 36 by the time I had Sophie, but I then had to think, well, if something happened to me, who would look after her? Because I became a single mum quite quickly. I divorced when she was 7 months old, but then that thought was then in my head. You know, and I thought, that's ridiculous, I don't have to start thinking along those lines at 36, but I thought, well, I've got to, for her sake, so who would that person be? But then I solved the problem, I named the person, you know, got that all legally sorted out, and then I brushed it under the carpet as soon as possible.
But why not? I mean, it's a bit like advanced care plans that, you know, especially someone, you know, if you've been diagnosed with a dementia and you still have capacity to actually make those decisions, you know, talk to your district nurse, your GP, say, actually, I want an advanced care plan. I want to write down at this moment what I want, and then if I can't, you know, this goes for anybody.
Yes.
If I lose capacity for whatever reason, be it dementia, be it other things, then I've written down what I want or what I don't want.
Absolutely.
You know, I don't want peg feeding. I don't want this. I don't want that. And, you know, we have all the facilities there to do it. And people, research has shown, people that write it down are more likely to get what they want.
Yes. Well, that makes sense.
And
definitely.
It makes it easier for the family as well, so they're not thinking, well, would she have wanted that or would she have wanted that?
At a time when they're already grieving and have got more than enough admin and horror to cope with, that something is done and sorted.
It's sorted. That's what mum or dad or brother or sister, that's what they wanted. They wrote it down there. Update it as you go along.
I think we're moving towards that. I hear more people talking about things like that. But I still think that some of us are in a bubble where you kind of think, it's not going to happen to me. You know, I'm never going to need that kind of thing. I think you accept at some point, obviously, death's going to happen to you. But you think, I'll be fine, you know, just sort of roll over in my sleep or something. It's the way we are, isn't it? We have this strange relationship with death, don't we?
We do, and also I think if you think about it, only about 18% of people die at home now, whereas in the past, obviously, most people would die at home. And we're trying to slowly change, you know, people dying where they want to be. And it's not usually in an acute hospital because that's where, you know, people are trying to get better rather than, you know, it's not built for that. So it's one of those things that, again, we need to talk about it. And we need to think that there comes a time when medicine can't do anymore. You know, we've come to that time now. And we're almost frightened of saying... And the horrible phrase is, oh, there's nothing more we can do.
Yes.
Which is not right. There's huge amounts more. Palliative care is huge. The drugs we have, the ways of making people comfortable is there, and that's what we should be using. So never let anyone say to you, there's nothing more we can do.
No.
What they mean is, we can't cure you.
Hmm.
But if you think of the amount of people that are living quite happily with chronic disease, and we call it now living with dementia.
That's right,
we?
Yes.
And it's really important that that's what we do. We live with whatever we have, whether it's dementia, whether it's COPD, all those things, that we live as well as we can. Was it Dame Cicely Saunders? You know, we help you to live until you die. You know, we're to live well until you die.
Which is what all of us are doing.
Yeah.
Whether we're well or ill, that's
Absolutely.
What all of us get up and do every day. We're
yes.
living as well as we can until
yes.
the day we die.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
yeah. The atmosphere up at the Old Mountbatten Hospice, I mean, I've been in there. It's
yeah.
a beautiful space up there, isn't it? It's full of light and it's airy, and there seems to be a wonderful mood there.
Yes.
Do you welcome volunteers and visitors? You know, can people come and see the work?
Please do. I mean, is
that okay with the patients?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
What we have? Do you know the John Chevrolet?
Yes,
Center?
Very well. Yes.
So I mean, that is absolutely open access. And I know we used to have on a Friday every month, there was a walk around the wards and things like that. If someone's particularly interested, if they came and said, I'd really like to look. Because sometimes people are really frightened to go across the threshold, aren't they?
Yes, indeed.
And then when they come in, they go, oh, I didn't know it like this.
Yes.
Look, there are people laughing.
Yes.
You know, and it is a very positive place. It is a very... and of course people die there. But people die... at home, and people die in St Mary's. So, and I think something like 60% of our patients come in, we make their symptoms as good as they can, and then they go out again.
Yes.
So, but people always feel, I mean, it's just the word hospice, isn't it? That if you come into a hospice, that's it. And nothing could be further than the truth.
It has got that connection. I mean, that's what people yeah. think automatically, yes.
yes.
As well as the word palliative care.
Yeah.
That's another one, you know, you don't want to hear.
Yes.
So it is very difficult to get over people's conceptions of those words, isn't it? And the truth behind them.
Mm.
But I think the way you're explaining it opens it up and frees it up and makes one feel okay with it, I think.
Yes. I think it is about living. It's not about dying. Yes, of course, you know, people die there and we die. Everyone dies. But it's about making the best of whatever time. None of us know, do we?
No.
What time we've got. And it's making the best and being, you know, because you can't, if you're in pain, you can't enjoy yourself. If you're feeling sick, that's not good. So having those symptoms sorted out as much as possible helps that living.
Of course, and everybody's entitled to that, aren't they?
Yes, definitely. That's
a basic human right.
It is.
And there's no need in this day and age, like you say, we've got medication, we've got people who understand and know these conditions, and at that end of life can give that end of life care.
Mm.
So that is everyone's entitlement
yes.
to be able to have that dignity and that love and that care.
Absolutely, definitely.
Well, so what would you say, what would your wish be for the island going forward?
I would like us to be a dementia-friendly island.
Not feel with that at the moment?
I think there are really good, amazing pockets, but there's a lot more work to do. There's a lot more work to do in the whole of the country, to be honest.
Yes, a lot with the comprehension, the understanding of it.
The understanding and sort of take some of the fear away from people, because it's, you know, it's overtaken cancer in a way, hasn't it, of being the disease you don't want to get. And you know, inevitably it will happen. You know, the older you get, the more likely it is to happen. But it's, as long as we have the care there and the understanding of that care and the care for the carers too, and that's really important.
Oh, it's key.
It's, yeah. Well, you know, don't you?
Yes. Yeah.
Because, you know, you are that carer. I know.
But I was meaning more the people, you know, the mum's carers who are there 24/7 with her now, that they need to be valued so much more
they
than they are.
Absolutely.
And
but also, you know, the families around that as well. And it's working like in a triadic relationship, isn't it?
Yes.
Whereby you have the person with dementia right in the centre, and then you've got the formal carers, you know, like the guys at Polis, and the informal carers, and the Apple Nurse, well, that's four things, but within that mix as well.
And what, so people listening, what would you say the absolute key gift, or what's the big thing that an Admiral Nurse can bring to that mix?
I think it's the, often it will be, especially the other Admiral Nurses, it's sometimes, I mean, I wish it wasn't at times of crisis, because I think it would be good for people to have support from diagnosis all the way through, but we're living in the real world. So sometimes when it's at times of transition, when someone is going from home into a residential home, sometimes it's with behavioural problems, those times when someone's not coping anymore, that the Admiral Nurses can come along and actually give strategies and understanding and support, and also just supporting someone that, yes, you are, you know, you're doing a great job.
Yeah.
There.
Yeah.
And people always are. They're always doing it from the heart. Even though it might feel really difficult at times, you know they're trying their best, and it's to give people strategies and understanding, like we were talking about earlier with the bookcase, that understanding.
Yes,
of,
that's a really useful
why
analogy.
Someone is behaving like that. It's not, they're not hitting out because they don't love you. They might not have seen you coming. You know, with they call it the Alzheimer's window, whereby visually sometimes people only see a very small amount with macular degeneration and things like that. So if you come from behind someone, you might frighten them to bits.
Yes, because, of course.
And I would hit out at someone if they came from behind them. If a carer goes up and they don't recognise them, and suddenly someone tries to take your clothes off, I mean, I think I would, you know, get cross and what have you. If you don't understand what people are doing, even though, bless them, they're probably explaining why they're doing it, if you're not comprehending that,
yes, of course.
It's very, very difficult for people not to feel upset by someone biting and screaming sometimes, those things.
And as a relative, I've had a lot of support from the Admiral Nurses, and one simply said to me, you know, you don't have to go and visit every day.
No.
You know, if you can't get there every day, don't beat yourself up. It's fine. And it was just not giving me permission to sort of skip off and, you know, have a day on the beach and not bother. It was saying it's what you're doing is fine, and if you can't get there for whatever reason, mum will be fine, it will be okay. And that was a huge kind of weight lifted. And just her saying that, and we were going through some photos of old film stars, black and white film stars, and I was getting quite upset for mum, because she didn't remember who they were. You know, there were people like Charlie Chaplin and Marilyn Monroe who, of course, she would have known. And I thought, well, why they say they go back, why can't she remember? And the nurse said to me, it's absolutely, she's enjoying looking at the pictures. She's smiling, she's really happy looking at these and talking. You know, the nurse was talking to her mum, wasn't really talking back, but she was smiling and nodding, and she said, we're communicating about them, it's something that she's getting pleasure from. So the fact she doesn't know, she can't name them, doesn't matter. She hadn't actually, somewhere in there she might remember that it's Charlie Chaplin, she just can't explain it to us. And again, that sort of went, oh, okay, you know. But because you, it's these strange pins you kind of go along, and you're trying to move along a linear path and make progress. And of course, there's nothing linear about it, is there?
And one day might be better than another.
Yes.
As well, because it's not linear. So, you know, you might have had a really good day and you remember all sorts of things, and then the next day it's different. But it's like taking a day at once, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Taking an hour at once sometimes.
And it's always amazes me the things that they do respond to. You know, animals and children go in there, and babies. And mum will start talking to them, which is, you know, that little bit of miracle magic.
Yes.
And, you know, your heart leaps because you think, oh, great, you know, kind of got mum back. But it's not, it's just a moment in time, and it's remembering that. But just holding that is so special.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, it's been an absolute joy to talk to you, Jill. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
And, you know, well done on all the wonderful work you and your team and all the carers on the island and sort of nationwide do. for our loved ones. So thank you so much for that. And, you know, anybody that's interested in joining Jill George in this profession, please, as she said, go and visit her at the L. Mountbatten Hospice. I'm sure she'd love to see you. And just see if it's for you. Just give it a try. So have a lovely weekend. Enjoy the sunshine. And join me again next week. I've been Joan Ellis. My guest was Jill George. And just have a lovely time. Enjoy life. Take care. Bye-bye now. Thank you. www.vectisradio.com